to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tamales. Mr. Matt Wilmer, the board. SP Futures up. Wait a minute. That's not today, man. We got to get today. I got so much stuff going on over here.
November 15th.
Is that a good day?
As far as I know, it's payday.
Yeah, that's true.
Paydays are usually good days.
Got to remember. Paydays at the truck docks. What a riot that was. Those guys. We used to get paid on Friday, right? SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 43, Dow Futures up 105. We'd get paid on Friday, and then on Sunday night, we started at midnight Sunday night, right? That was a shift. So these guys are all sitting there in our office ready to get your truck, right? Because you have, when, there was a choreography to, well, trucking, I'm sure it probably still is, but, at midnight, all the over-the-road guys would come in somewhere in a few hours before from Denver and LA and wherever they came from. And they'd be at a certain door. So then it would take the guy, he'd look at all the stuff on there and he'd figure out what on the truck went to what local place. So the idea, you put them on the local trucks, they'd deliver them to people's places. While they were there, they picked up stuff, to go to Denver and LA and wherever. They would bring it back to the dock. So from 6:30 to 12, or from 6 to whatever it was, 8 hours, you loaded up the road guys, and they took off, then the road guys pulled in, and then you took it off. So there was a choreography to it, right? I mean, when you think about it, it makes perfect sense, right?
Of course, yeah.
So, these guys would be sitting there, and they're all like borrowing dough from people. I'm like, this is total blue collar, right? And the guys are getting checks for, $400, $500. It's absolutely not the group that would have gone and had a $100 dinner downtown. If you could find a place back then that even was $100, you probably could have. So I wonder, what do these guys do with all that dough over a weekend? I mean, beers are like, 40 cents or 50 cents at the time. How do you blow through that much dough? I haven't already married. So I'm like, oh man. And I don't know if they're playing poker or what they were doing, but anyway. The world has always been able to take get people to separate themselves from their cash, right? But these guys are always a riot. Hey, you got $20, buddy? What are you doing? I usually work at weekends, right? These guys are making like three times as much as me. These guys borrowed $20 from me. I'm like, all right, here's $20 of LeVar. Like, plus, where's he going to get the money by tomorrow? We didn't get paid again until Friday. But the best story is some guy. He gets his check, and the check's bigger than it ought to be. And he knew it, so he cashed it. So the next week, it's bigger than it ought to be. So he cashed it. So the next week, he gets stiffed a little bit. So he marches into the office. So they go, we'll take a look at this. The lady says to him, hey, you didn't complain when the two before were bigger than they're supposed to be. And the guy goes, well, I can forgive one mistake, maybe two, but not three.
That's great.
That's just swell. I mean, at least he had a sense of humor about the whole thing. Anywho, so what? Our sports teams, the Bullies looking decent. The Hawks, I looked at them a little bit, but they look pretty sad.
Well, they had won three in a row since the new coach was hired, and then I didn't see what happened over the weekend.
They played less yesterday, I think. They didn't play Saturday.
Yeah, I'd have to pull up the Blackhawks. They look sad after a whatever it was, 0-9 start, 0-7-2 start. But since the coaching change and the sort of turmoil came out and became public, they've actually played a lot better, surprisingly. They've won three in a row and are now 4-9-2. Still not good, but not dead last anymore.
Well, remember the scene in The Natural where they see him coming out of the cellar? Knights come out of the cellar?
Yeah.
I guess that's the Hawks, eh?
I guess. Meanwhile, the Bulls have been pretty good all season and are now 9-4 after they won their second game of the West Coast Circus trip, beating the Clippers last night on the road. And the Clippers had won 7 in a row and hadn't lost a game since, like, October 29th, they said last night. And the Bulls came in there and had a really good first quarter and then held on to win at the end. And it was a real nice win for them without Vucevic, who's in the COVID protocol. And they still don't have Kobe White yet back, although there's rumor he may come back tonight for limited minutes off the bench for the first time all season.
The other kid is when? His surgery is successful, I assume?
As far as I know, but he's out, I think, at least for the regular season, if not for the whole year, with the, after the torn ligament in his wrist.
Hey, I have a question about you, or for you. Well, by the way, last week I was getting a bunch of feedback on the shows. Nobody, the number one story everybody was giggling about was the fish. Were you here Thursday? Was it Thursday?
I missed that one.
The guy who hauled the 72-pound carp out of Humboldt Park Lagoon.
Oh, really? Wow.
Then he puts it in his shopping cart, and he's running down the street trying to get the thing weighed. So he takes it to this place, and somebody gets in a car. Well, evidently, his buddy had to go get his salmon net to haul the thing out of there, right? So he got this massive fish. Evidently, there are, you learn something every day, man. There are certified fish scales. So the one at Montrose Harbor wasn't big enough for this fish. So they ended up going to that place over in Bridgeport. We go down Canal Street to the, you know, Sox Park. You always go by the bait shop, Tony's or whatever.
Yeah.
They had to bring it over there. He's the only guy around who's got a certified scale that big.
Wow.
So they ended up bringing the carp over there. So the city immediately blames the carp being in the lagoon on some out-of-state fish stocker place from like 20 years ago. Because they figured this thing's got to be 20 years old. So they claim that they were stocking back in the day with catfish, and once in a while a little carpy guy got slipped in with the catfish. That's how. So it's like none of their fault, right? There's a carp in the lagoon, an invasive species.
Oh, God.
And so they already had done the blame game, but the picture of this guy with the grocery shopping cart running down the block with this fish is priceless.
72 pound. I can't even envision a fish that big.
It was like 2 feet around, and I don't know. It was huge. It had to be like 3 feet long. Somehow.
So when carp are in your lagoon like that, do they just kill everything? Or
Actually, they probably keep it clean because they're bottom suckers.
Yeah.
But I think they eat some other eggs and stuff. But now this is another claim. I don't know how you buy this one. They claim that in a lagoon that size, they can't reproduce. Oh. I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they're going to find, but they said he had to be like 20 years old.
Wow. Well, yeah, I would imagine he's pretty old if he's that big.
Yeah, hey, I got a question for you, since you're our internet identification guy. What is going on? I'm reading this thing yesterday. How are people could be this? I don't know. I don't want to be saying ignorant this time in the morning, but I will. This article is by a guy named Hugh Sun and Kif Leswing. Anyway, they write for CNBC. Apple is sticking taxpayers with part of the bill for rollout of tech giant's digital ID card. So Apple is recurring. Is evidently doing these ID cards for the state, but they're coming in, they've got a partnership where they're telling the state, Apple requires states to maintain the systems needed to issue and service credentials at taxpayer expense, according to contracts signed by four states. The agreement, obtained through public record requests from CNBC and other sources, mostly portrays Apple as having a high degree of control over the government agencies responsible for issuing identification cards. Apple has sole discretion for key aspects of the... What in the hell are these guys doing, right? You have any idea? What does that even mean?
I don't know. This is the first time seeing this. It
says the company requires states to maintain the systems needed to issue and service credentials, hire project managers who respond to Apple inquiries, prominently market the new feature, and push for its adoption with other government agencies, all at taxpayer expense, according to contracts signed by the four states. Where do we hire these people? The move has brought about questions from industry observers about why local authorities are ceding control of citizens' identities to a $2.4 trillion private corporation. Beyond that, the integration of identity into powerful mobile devices is drawing concern from privacy experts about the risk of dystopian scenarios. What is dystopian scenarios? Involving surveillance. Contracts between Cupertino, California-based Apple and states including Georgia, Arizona, Kentucky, and Oklahoma, which would not have been the states I would have picked that would have done this, would you? Provide a rare glimpse into the dealings of a powerful company. Apple is known for its obsession with secrecy. It typically forces potential partners to sign non-disclosure agreements to prevent its documents from spilling into public view. What? So they're going to, Apple's going to be doing the, in order to get it on the phone, you're going to tell all the people, Georgia and Arizona will be the first states to offer driver's licenses on the wallet app.
Okay, so this, so I was wondering what we're getting to here. So that's the point. So the point is, you can get a state ID or driver's license digitally, and not have the physical card. You can just have it on your phone. That's the point of this.
Evidently,
states are willing to do that or try that.
Yeah, except Apple has sole discretion for key aspects of the program, including what types of devices will be compatible. Digital IDs, in other words, they can shut somebody else out. How states are required to report on the performance of the effort and when the program is launched according to the documents. Apple even gets to review and approve the marketing that states are required to do. That's a... Whatever it is, I don't like it.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think of the downfalls to this, which it seems that there could be many.
So the dynamic is similar to the way Apple typically deals with vendors. Well, instead of getting paid by Apple, the states have to shoulder the financial burden of administering the program. It's like a vendor relationship, which makes no sense to me because the states have the monopoly on what they're giving to Apple. They could presumably negotiate a much more equal contract. Or any other example where government-owned systems and identity credentials were made available for commercial purposes in this manner. So your IDs are going to be made available to Apple at the state's cost.
Well, I mean, the states, for whatever reason, want this because, what, they don't want to deliver physical IDs anymore? So they're willing to pay?
But, I mean, you pay for it. They charge you whatever they want. It's not like they lose money on it.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Are they losing money on it with all the staffers they have there and all that?
Well, according to this, Apple now gets to tell them how many staffers they need. Which they think they're going to get rid of anybody.
Right, yeah, which of course they won't. Yeah, I mean, I have to look into this more because it's the first time seeing this, but it's certainly interesting.
Well, don't you get the, feeling that there's this general lack of common sense anywhere that to take things down the road and just say, no, what does this actually mean? If we all do this now, Apple is we got our credentials through Apple. So Apple's going to get to know everything about everybody, right?
So they would get to know everything about everybody, and could they potentially say that if you don't buy an Apple iPhone, then you can no longer get a state ID?
The guy's sort of...
that's what's coming next?
The guy's sort of hinting that here, isn't he? That's
So buy our $2,000 phone, otherwise you can't drive your car?
Yeah, this is kind of going wrong.
I mean, I don't think it would ever get to that point, but who knows?
It's not like you haven't thought of it.
Well, Apple certainly thought of it.
Well, I never thought when I went on the trading floor that there would be no trading floors. I never dreamed when we burned the mortgage for the CBOE building in 1997 or 8 that 25 years later they'd be in the post office and they're trying to sell a building with nobody on the floor. I mean, these guys think ahead. They have a much different point of, long-term point of view than you and I do, unfortunately.
That's true.
Because
they'll be around long after us. Most cases, not all cases.
Well, yeah, it's the. I don't know. What would you do if we had a constitutional convention again and we had a bunch of people sitting there and say, how exactly do you deal with corporations? Because I think when the original Constitution was written, people get the idea that even if you were the biggest crook around, you didn't last very long in the cosmic sphere, right? These guys never die.
Right.
And, some do, I guess, if they totally screw up, but...
Yeah, I mean, I never would have thought Sears would die, and they did.
Yeah, isn't that something?
I mean, growing up, I mean, God, that would be a company that you would thought be around forever.
How did the firm that... the first firm... Actually, who was first? Was it them or Ward's? I think it must have been Sears. It said people that are at home need to find a way to buy stuff without having to come to the store. Isn't that the same... the same principle that Amazon's using?
Exactly. That's what we've said on the show many times. Yeah. Is they had the whole infrastructure to be Amazon before Amazon, if they had any sort of, you know, foresight at all, which they obviously didn't.
Well, I think many in some companies, and I don't know where, the shareholders have lost power just about everywhere. You have this cadre of what does Eric call them, the management class, right? That just sit on everybody else's boards and appoint each other to various jobs. And I can remember if they ran a YouTube video of all the times, you know, Jim Cramer did nothing but say that all you have to do is follow Eddie Lambert when he took over Sears, because it was a real estate thing, and this guy, he's been the most brilliant man at Goldman Sachs, and follow him, and blah, blah, blah. Have you ever seen a company go straight downhill faster than when somebody took over in that place?
he pushed it over the finish line, that's for sure.
Well, the idea of moving out to Hoffman Estates, I think, buried him, too. They totally lost track of their... I mean, how many people did they lose... For those that don't, I mean, I'm not a huge student of how Sears worked, but their original corporate site was in, it's like on Cicero and Belmont or something, maybe? Something like that. They had a big,
really?
Big place out
Northwest.
There.
Northwest.
And the idea was that their clientele were, you know, essentially the blue-collar people. I mean, if you went to a Sears store at 63rd and Halstead or 63rd and Western, you went in and there was the... you know what was interesting, though? Is that the, it's not like I know much about ladies' clothes. I don't, but I just happen to have an aunt that worked in the hosiery department at Sears. And, ladies always like to look good. And for whatever reason, Sears had the best women's stocks of anybody, even Fields or everybody. Even the people would, like, go from Fields to Sears to buy whatever. They're nice dress stockings, you know, and stuff, which I only knew that because my aunt worked in the hosiery department. And, but the rest of it was all hardware and, you know, flannel shirts and blue jeans and stuff like that. And, the best hot dogs on earth. You know, when you walk from the main floor down to the basement where all the hardware and paint and stuff was, I challenge anybody to walk by a hot dog thing and not buy a hot dog. I mean, it was just, the smell was just terrific. And, anyway, but they all ended up all the stuff going for everybody's cars, and they're changing your oil while you're working, and same kind of stuff that Walmart. I mean, it's all the stuff Sears had that these other guys all had. And all of a sudden they just, I don't know, when they moved from that place to downtown, people said they kind of lost their touch, because but even here downtown, you had, if you look at Sears Tower, the bottom part of that, well now what, Willis Tower? The bottom part of that is really high density people. And up, as you start to go up and you start losing parts of the building, then there's, you know, executive offices, law firms and stuff where all kinds of people have a window. The bottom part is real high density stuff. So they had the cubicles of people. Sears must have had, did you ever walk into a Sears catalog place, Manny?
No.
Well, the catalog is about from where you sit to where I sit. There was a catalog for everything. I mean, they had a boating catalog. They had a fishing catalog. They had, I mean, if you wanted it, they had it. I mean, every conceivable thing in there. If you wanted to put up, you know, outbarns and stuff, they had an outbarn catalog. They had, so they must have had, I don't know how many buyers Sears had, but the people who bought stuff for them were the same people that used it, right? So,
yeah.
And, they moved out to Hoffman Estates. The difference between at that time taking the L downtown for a buck, buck and a half, and working and going home, and having to move out to Hoffman Estates, buy a car, they lost all kinds of their people. I think intentionally, to be honest with you. So I don't know who ended up doing the buying and stuff for them, but they just, whatever, they just basically, you know, pooped to bed. But I don't know what their story
was.
Well,
I mean, I would say that they were past their heyday when I was a kid.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, I mean, my first memories of going to Sears in the 80s and 90s, I never thought that anything was that nice there. And then when I got older, going there, if you needed something, you know, bedding or something, you might run in there and get, you know, a new pillow or a new mattress pad or something random like that. You couldn't get help anywhere. There was no one working. I mean, it was just an awful shopping experience. There was, No one, they had one person doing the checkout, so there'd be like a line of like nine people, and then there's like six other people standing around. I mean, it was just a terrible experience. There was no sort of management in sight. And, you know, but when you talk to people that grew up with Sears back in, you know, the day, it was not like that at all. So something changed.
Well, I know my aunt got a little
store level.
She got a little spiff for, you know, for selling socks.
Yeah.
I mean, and she was there. That was her spot. She had like one assistant. But if you walked in, it was a big room and all I did was sell women's socks. I mean, I don't think they lasted that long or whatever, but she, I mean, she was there all the time. That was her spot. And she did well. You know, whatever well was in those days, but I mean, you did, you know, pretty good. And you're in bad shape when you have the world's biggest and best catalog thing. You dump your catalog and then you go buy Land's End like a year later and then you sell those guys because you can't run theirs either. I mean, what do you do with all those people? They must have laid them all off when they went up to Hoffman Estates. They had to, but whatever they did, they supposedly had all this land that they were going to make all this money because they had all this land.
Yeah, what happened to that?
They got some of the spots they can't even sell. The one, you know, when you take the Skyway, you see that size of that Sears place down there? They can't even sell it. But that used to service all the people who used to work at the Southworks and all those places. That was an incredibly busy Sears.
Well, that big Sears location at State and Madison that closed pretty recently, I would say, what, three to 5 years ago?
Yeah, that wasn't the original store. The original store was on Van Buren.
Yeah, I know it wasn't the original, but that was a big store. And then I think it closed maybe 5 years ago. That's like, did they sell that to the city or something? I think that's like a Chicago Public Schools building now, or at least temporarily.
Well, Jan was in. When the hell was Jan in? John Flanagan, and he went through the list of all the buildings that are over in that area of the Loop, State Street, that used to be tax-paying buildings, Goldblatt, Sears, and everything, are now like dorms and stuff for universities. Not like you don't want universities down here, but there's like, it's like 30% of the building, 25% of the buildings now are non-taxpaying.
It's crazy. Yeah, and if I'm right on that Sears thing, because I know...
They opened up a second store after they got rid of the first one.
Yeah.
Wasn't it just that Sears, it wasn't a full service thing where they had all the floors. It was just, the first one was like 10 stories. I mean,
it wasn't like that. This one was, like, it had the huge basement with a bunch of stuff in it, and then it had, like, maybe two stories.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But it was still a big store.
What do they used to call those? There was a name for them. It wasn't the appliance store, but it was a Sears something something store, because it wasn't the full department store.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think it had furniture and all that stuff in there.
I don't think it had furniture. It had a ton of clothes and it had a ton of like bedroom stuff. It was kind of like a Kohl's almost. It was that sort of layout. But it was a horrible store to shop in. And I only went in there a few times because I worked right by there. And so if I needed something, I could grab it on the way to the train, on the way home. But now I think it's like a Chicago Public Schools building where I don't know if it's like the teachers union,
I don't know.
People are in there or what? I'm not sure, but it's talk about another building that's not getting any tax money.
Well, the where the Target is, that used to be Carson Bruce.
Right, Scott. That's across the street.
Well, that's
on the other side of state.
Well, that's a Miles Vanderbilt building. So Carson's in one day they decided the business wasn't so good downtown, so they sell the building. Then all of a sudden, business starts to get a lot better. The guy raises the rent, and they couldn't pay the rent, and the building used to be theirs. Well, you know, these guys are all geniuses, right? And
yeah.
Yet, I mean, some of these decisions. So what's going on with the college football? We had Oklahoma lost, and so people are nudging all around. Is Wisconsin going to be? They seem to be improving, or is everybody just falling apart around them?
It's a combination of both. There's no doubt that Wisconsin's improving from what they were earlier in the year when they got blown out by Notre Dame. And they lost another game against a solid team. And
they lose to Purdue?
No, they beat Purdue. I'd have to pull up their schedule here real quick, which I can do. So Wisconsin is 7-3 overall, 5-2 in the Big Ten, tied with Iowa, who's 5-2. But Wisconsin beat Iowa, so they own the tiebreaker. So those two teams are battling it out for the rights to likely play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. Assuming Ohio State beats Michigan, which...
They play Michigan State, too, right?
Right, yeah. So Ohio State, plays Michigan State and then Michigan to close it out and they could lose one of those games, and then that'll be really interesting on the east side. But on the west side, it's coming down to, it looks like, pretty much Wisconsin and Iowa, and Iowa would need Wisconsin to lose, and they would have to win out since Wisconsin owns the tiebreaker, even though they're tied. But Wisconsin, they just started out, you know, really slow. Lost to Penn State to open the game, to open their season. Then they blew out Eastern Michigan. Then they lose to Notre Dame at Soldier Field. Then they lose to Michigan, and all of a sudden they're 1-3, and everyone's like, well, Wisconsin stinks. But ever since, they've won, what is it, 6 in a row here.
Yeah.
But they haven't really, you know, they beat Iowa at home, which is a good win, and they won at Purdue, which is a good win. But the
other, they got Minnesota away, too. We left.
Yeah. Yeah. They close out with Nebraska at home. They'll win that game. And then at Minnesota, which, you know, they could lose that game, but they're favored in that game, too. So they're definitely in the driver's seat.
Well, our girl Arielle is a serious Wisconsin fan, so she gets me up on this. If they beat Minnesota, they're definitely the winners in the West.
Well, yeah. They have to win their last two games. If Iowa wins their last two games, that's basically it. If Wisconsin controls their own destiny, if they beat Nebraska and they win at Minnesota, they're in. And if they don't and Iowa wins out, then Iowa's in. But it's gonna be fun because that Big Ten championship game is a lot of fun to go to. I went to one 5 years ago, and it was exciting. It was a lot of people didn't want the Big Ten to do the conference championship stuff like all the other schools did. The Big Ten was the last to do the conference tournaments in basketball, and then they were one of the last to do the championship game in football. But they did it, and they do it in Indianapolis, which is a kind of a cool centrally located town that has a bunch of bars around the stadium downtown. And so it's a fun Saturday to go to drive over there and sort of hang out and eat and drink all day, and then the game kicks off at 7 o'clock, and it's fun.
Well, the one of the teams, Manassas, a two loss Big Ten team, is probably not going to be in the Final Four.
I don't think anyone's getting in the playoff except for Ohio State. I guess Michigan and Michigan State, if they were to win out, would have a chance. But Ohio State, it would be probably the only likely team to make the playoff.
Well, so Oklahoma's got an issue now.
I would say they're out.
They can't. They still can't bring Cincinnati into the top four, even though they're undefeated, because they keep looking at the schedule. And so who does that leave? It leaves Georgia, Alabama, and one of those guys might lose, right? At least to each other.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. There's going to be a big scramble on the one-loss teams to get in there, and everybody's going to be complaining like they always do.
That's right.
I don't see the Irish making it, even if they went out. But S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 35. Be right back with John Flanagan. We're going to talk about all of a sudden these Medicare fees are going up like 14%. Where's this no inflation? Where's this transitory stuff, man? Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 1050, NASDAQ Futures up 35. Dow futures up 93. Individual stocks in the Dow. We got Caterpillar up $1.43. Caterpillar has been up huge the last couple of weeks, more than anybody. We got Microsoft up $1.90. My silent big time monopolist that nobody even talks about. Nike up $1.04. We've got Tesla down again today, down 24.60. It's 1,008. God, man, I'm going to say these guys. Where do these guys top out at? Let me look and see. Let me get up the chart for you. 1250. Where were these guys? These guys were, they traded 1215 and, picked at 1243 on the 4th of November. And now they're 1008. Ouch. That's always, always down. Anyway, wow. Asia. Nikkei up 166.5%. Shanghai down 5.2%. Hang Seng up 62.2%. From Europe, we've got DAX up 18.1%, FTSE down 12.1%. So Europe sleepy this morning. CAC around up 34.5%. We've got bonds down 232. I'll never stop saying that, maybe 30 seconds, which I used to trade at 2 basis points to 1.56. Bund minus 0.26. Japan positive 0.07. So very little movement in the bond story. Really very little movement in the bond since last week with the CPI number in the auction. Oil down 97 cents, 79.82. That's 1.2%. Brent down 111, 81.06. Natural gas down 2 cents, 4.76. Gold down 40, but still 1863. Trying to make it towards 1900, but consolidating a little bit today. Silver down 8 cents, 25.26. Copper down a penny, 443. And we've got Bitcoin up 1,700 to 65,916. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start here on a Monday morning. No delays yet to speak of on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower. Stevenson, we're starting to see a little bit of red as the traffic volume picks up and no accidents to report. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good too, as is Lakeshore Drive. And that's it. No issues off the expressways either. So off to a great start here on a Monday morning. Let's try and keep it that way. Weather today, it's cold out there, partly cloudy skies. At some point, right now it's overcast, but we should see a little bit of sunshine, but very blustery and cold, a high of just 37. Right now it's cloudy and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 56. In sports, the Bears were on a bye this week, so we turned our attention to the rest of the NFL. Arizona Cardinals were blown out at home in a surprising loss to the Carolina Panthers. Not that they lost, but just in the way they lost. 34-10 was the final in that one. Cardinals are now 8-2. Sunday Night Football, the Chiefs, for the first time in quite a while, looked like the Chiefs again. They went to Las Vegas and blew out the Raiders 41-14. Patrick Mahomes looked like his old self, and they look like a contender again after really kind of sleepwalking through the first 10 games of the season. Chiefs blew out the Raiders 41-14. NBA basketball last night, if you stayed up for it, the Bulls went to game two of their West Coast road trip. They're in L.A. to take on the Clippers, and the Clippers had won seven in a row, but the Bulls went into L.A. and beat up on the Clippers. 100-90 was the final in that one. Snapping the Clippers' seven-game winning streak. Bulls are back in action tonight in the same building to take on the Los Angeles Lakers. LeBron James, I think, is likely out still with an abdominal strain, but the Lakers are still pretty good, so that'll be a good one tonight as well. Suns beat the Rockets 115-89.
Gee. How old is he going to be?
He's a year younger than me, so he's got to be 37.
Are you still playing in the NBA?
Never did, but still trying to play basketball, although we haven't played in a while. But he's still playing. I mean, you look at his numbers before he had this abdominal strain thing that's kept him out the last five or six games or whatever it is. His numbers are the same as they were 15 years ago. He's 27 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. Pretty much you can pencil it in. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's really something. I mean, he's a, when you've got that gene pool, though, I mean, he's a big man. I mean, and he's,
but usually those guys, their feet start to break down, or you know, a little bit, yeah, when they get this age. And he, I mean, so far so good. He's shown no signs of wear and tear, and he's still playing at a very high level.
Well, he sure is all fun to watch. So it's not him, and he's been, you know, an investor. I wish he wouldn't have published that crazy thing on tweet, but he sure got it back quick enough. And it doesn't seem to be affecting him much, even though. If anybody else had done it, the one about with the target and the policeman.
Oh, yeah.
That was but fortunately, he must have caught it on a Friday night when nobody was looking, you know, which is a good thing, because I don't think that's really what the guy thinks.
By the way, Kevin writes in, if the state ID is on your phone, the state can track your every movement without a subpoena, going back to our Apple discussion earlier. Yeah, it sounds like it. And then he says, regarding Apple's contract terms, there are four simple words I teach my students to use when negotiating contract terms. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. or first words would be the three simple words, read the contract. You have Johnny with us?
I am, Tom. Thank you.
We had a good time. Was Dan telling you about his weightlifting prowess the other night?
No, but I can believe it.
Yeah. We had Dan Janitas, who was in studio last week. I had no idea. How does everybody know all this stuff with me? I mean, you know, it's like one of those things. How does everybody know all this stuff with me? But
yeah, he's a competitive weightlifter, Dan. Not to mention a pretty talented trader, I would say. But yeah, he's a competitive weightlifter. And I remember when Kenny Polcari, our guy Kenny, who's on with us every Tuesday, referred Dan to us because they're buddies. I think they're both originally from Boston. I don't know if they knew each other back then. I assume they did.
Well, yeah, Dan was talking about it. They grew up in the same area.
Yeah, but he goes, you know, this guy Dan would be great for the show. And by the way, not only is he really smart at talking markets, but he's a competitive weightlifter, and the guy's just like built like a you-know-what house.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, all right, let's get him on.
I bet he's still one of those guys that does. I had a client that used to do that. They still do like the clean and jerk and all that stuff. I mean, you ever see anybody doing it? I never have seen anybody do that in a health club, have you?
I have no idea.
You know, thanks for inviting me to that evening, too, Tom, because it was great to meet Dan. I really enjoyed talking to him, too. He's a super guy.
Well, you'd be surprised what you might, you know, find when you get out more, you know, just saying.
Well, Tom, I have to get my Sears story out of the way first. When you were talking about the Sears at the Skyway there,
that's
my old hood, one of the store at 79th and Kenwood. And to show you how far back I go with Sears, they gave I believe a 10% discount to all city employees or their families, so that might be a key to their great success in Chicago. But my uncle was a Chicago cop, and the first stop we ever made in the Sears store, every time we went there, which was probably two or three times a week, you went to the coal desk. They actually sold coal on the second floor, just like at a candy counter. There'd be these display cases for anthracite and bituminous stuff, but you applied for a discount slip with information about who the family member was, who, you know, whose discount you were seeking, and you presented that slip every time you made a purchase in the store, and you'd get 10%, I think, off of every purchase with some exceptions. But you would run into at least five or six families that you knew in there every time, too. It was truly a community center for the neighborhood. There's nothing like it now at all.
You guys have a coal-fired furnace?
No, but other people did. You know, they'd be lining up ordering so many tons of this, and we were on a first name basis with this woman who manned the coal desk because we saw her all the time. It was verboten to go to the store without applying for the discount slip. That was just like the worst thing you could do.
Well, yeah, I remember my grandfather getting the coal delivered, and he was ingenious. We had a piece of the fence he could take apart, so you could dump the coal closer right by the coal chute, and then you had to shovel it in there.
Yeah.
Maybe you, I like getting
there's
up in the morning.
Work for it.
Yeah, now it's cold enough in the morning. You have to go downstairs and get the furnace on, freezing while everybody else is in bed, hoping you get the heat on before they
get. I wouldn't trade those days for anything.
Oh, God. Well, plus, once you did it, you couldn't turn it off. I mean, the place got amazingly hot, and then it would then the fire would go out. I mean, it wasn't like you could set a thermostat.
No, it was constant vigilance. I mean, you had to keep it alive at night, so you kind of like, you know, not bury the thing with ash, but you tamp it down a little bit, but you didn't want to lose the fire because it would start the whole thing again.
No, come on, you know,
it was called
banking.
Banking the fire.
Would you ever know that term, Eddie? Banking the fire?
I don't think I would.
And they used to do that in the schools, too. Somehow, there's something bizarre about coal, but I remember the guys doing this. I was at a couple places that were coal-fired. Not very many, but there were a couple still. And you have the thing raging. You let it kind of come down a little bit. But then you'd stir it in such a way where you took a whole bunch of new coal and you just threw it on top. And you just left it there. And the fire wasn't, because of the way you stirred it, it wouldn't set the new stuff on fire. It would just kind of sit on there. So next morning, all you had to do was go in and like stir it up and a thing and go,
right.
Fire. I mean, if you ever had a cold boiler, I think it was many hours to get it up and going. Start with
it required kindling and lots of patience. And of course, you had to dump the ash periodically, too, lugging that out to the alley. So if you had an alley.
Well, these two guys that would come in this one place, talk about guys that were strong. The down, there was like four steps down into the spot where the furnace room, for lack of a better term, boiler room. And, so they had these 55-gallon metal drums, maybe they kind of used to use for garbage cans. Well, the suckers, these guys, the things on the bottom, they were big hunks of coal that would like kind of congeal, and they would never burn. And they looked like a sponge, only they weren't a sponge, they're a big hunk of coal. They're called a clinker. Remember those, Jen?
Yes.
Well, they take the clinkers and dump them in these 55-gallon drums. And I was a pretty big kid, but I was, you know, I was, you know, 19, 20. But I could, on the side, I could roll these drums around. But I'm sitting there going, who the hell's going to take these things out of here? Where's the dolly? All of a sudden, these two guys come in. They're called the ash haulers. These two black guys come in. One guy's pretty burly. He's a pretty big guy. The other guy is maybe 5'9", 150 pounds on a bad day. You know, I mean, I'm thinking, how the hell these guys, they take the thing, they push it over, grab the bottom, squat down so you're using your all your leg muscles, you know, so you don't break your back. The first couple times you must break your back. And they do essentially a big squat and yank the thing up and drop it on another 55-gallon drum. So then you just walk over and you take the thing and they pull it down on their back. Now the little guy had to put his hand on the top and put the other hand behind his butt and hold the bottom, and he walked up the steps. The burly guy just put the one hand on the top, bent over, the thing is on his back, he just balanced it with the one hand and walked right out there like he was carrying a knapsack. I'm sitting there going, I wouldn't mess with either one of these guys. I mean, good Lord. I mean, I'm sitting there going, God, I'm twice the size. Look, I couldn't do that. I don't think the three of us could do that. I'm like, the idea of bending that thing over, and the thing is full of, you know, these clinkers, it had to be 250 pounds, maybe not that much, 200 pounds. The dude, I mean, this is what they did all day. They reach down, come out of the squat, plop it on the other one, put it on your back, out the door, and I'm going, oh my God. I mean, it was pretty scary stuff. Anywho, that's our serious story. And that's, I'm talking about reminiscing, but Manny, how would you like to work like that all day? You know,
no thanks.
And, to return to what Kevin was saying, I absolutely agree with Kevin, by the way, about, you know, what the state has the right to do if they got your ID on an app like that. The first time I noticed this, Tom, was about a year ago when I renewed a membership at the Chicago History Museum up at Clark and North Avenue, which traditionally, you get a membership card with paper tickets for special exhibits and stuff, all this promo stuff. And when I renewed it the last time, I got, you know, an email saying, we're not doing any paper tickets anymore or ID cards. Instead, you got to download the wallet app and then you have this code, and this will load your membership onto your phone. And I renewed my membership at the Field Museum like a week later, same exact thing. You know, we've now gone to the wallet app. And I remember thinking, how long before your Social Security card or your driver's license, more likely, is going to be on this wallet app? And what the hell does that mean? I was starting to get nervous about having that kind of data on anything that I, you know, not only walk around with, but can be hacked and harvested in ways that I'm completely clueless about. So it's a terrible development. Of course, it was something you have to accept. If Apple's going to push it and the states are going to, you know, force everybody else to pay for it, what kind of leverage do you get to opt out of it?
But how do you find out? I mean, obviously everybody knows I'm a huge believer in, you know, no man can do one thing. I mean, whatever you do, there's a reaction to it. How many people do you think, Maddie, like even on a, you know, even a Tripoli or the Club Lag or any of these places, how many people just want no part of the parking app and don't want to put their credit card into a thing on the street? And maybe if they had the quarters, they wouldn't mind putting a few quarters in there. Maybe not. I mean, how many people do you think have just never used one of these machines and never will, that used to go to the Tripoli five times a month or to Lago twice a month? Do you think anybody has any idea how much this has cost people? I mean, or don't care or do care? I mean, when you do something like that, you must think, unless you're a complete moron, that, gee, if I'm going to put, you know, parking meters in front of Maddie Weber's hot dog stand and really enforce it, wouldn't you kind of want to know what you've done to Maddie's pie? Or they just don't care? I mean, ignorance is bliss.
I don't think they care, and it shows in the way the parking rates have just skyrocketed for even the shortest, you know, visit to places. I don't like using them because of the price, but I think the price has been jacked up because there's a lot of people who refuse to go through that hassle and expose their credit card and be out in the street holding their credit card not knowing who's behind them, so.
Yeah, we got a bunch of, I mean, those things are always, because we're going to have these people coming back and getting this money out of the place. That's why I got a bunch of stuff here. We'll go through some of this maybe after the break. Our friend Paul, who's an engineer, so he's normally a very bright guy, but when he starts hitting me up with all the things about the inflation stuff, and I don't know, I guess I feel like I'm an expert on this because I've been involved in it my whole life, but I guess there's no such thing as an expert. But this whole idea of don't worry, you know, productivity will take care of inflation. It has nothing to do with inflation. The inflation that's being caused right now, and a general price level inflation is not. To give you an example how it could work the other way, after the Civil War, where nobody was here, not even Mr. Flanagan, how's that for a shot, John? they had greenbacks out during the war. So after the war, it was one of the most productive times and the most high growth times in terms of real economy. It was almost like after World War II. There were a lot of inventions during the Civil War. I mean, it wasn't like washing machines or anything, but there were inventions. And a lot of railroad building, all kinds of stuff going on. An incredible amount of railroad building. And it all happened with a general price level that was going down because the federal government was dragging the greenbacks out of the economy because they wanted to get back on the gold standard and become a citizen in the rest of the world. Because they went off the gold standard for the Civil War, which when you went off the gold standard, the rest of the world looked down their nose at you. So we wanted to get back on the gold. We, the U.S., wanted to get back on the gold standard. So the only way to do that was to drain the money supply down to the point where we could have it essentially backed by gold again. So they pulled these greenbacks, hence the name greenbacks. They were only backed by the green that was on them. Greenbacks, right, Jen? Wasn't that the definition? So they drained them out. So we had an incredibly productive time while prices were going down. So there's not this real connection. There's a connection between not having enough money in the system. Now I'm going to say that if that draining the money out of the system, I don't know how much credit was used back in those days, But if you made it so people couldn't get credit and people at farms, you know, couldn't get a loan or something, if you drained it to that extent, you could have negatively impacted the economy. Right, Jen?
Yes.
But it doesn't mean you impacted the price level. Because the money, I don't know why it's such a hard concept to understand it. The amount of money derives its value like everything else from its scarcity. So you double the amount of money, stuff's just going up. If you pull it out, it's going down. But it doesn't mean that your productivity is worse or not. You can, if you do something dramatic like in the Depression, where all of a sudden people had wealth and money in a bank, and you closed the bank and they were just, you just yanked it off their balance sheet. You know, and the wealth dropped to that extent. Yeah, you can send something. But that's not just a decrease in the money supply, John. That's yanking people's wealth from them. Right?
Depleting their wealth.
Yeah, it's a whole different story. I mean, if you actually were to drain some of the money out to where you actually had a deflationary economy, somebody who had savings actually would become more wealthy, correct? Not the other
right.
way around.
Right.
But what happened during the Depression is, you know, Maddie Weber's great grandma went to the bank and what she got was a broken nose and the door hit her in the nose. And they said, oh, the $3,000 you had in here, Grandma Weber, you don't have anymore. That's a whole different program than we're talking about either after Civil War or now, or there's a couple times in India. There's all kinds of examples around the world where you can have a deflationary era with a lot of growth and innovation, right? So it can't. There are two separate topics, and I just, for the life of me, I can't get anybody to agree with that. No matter how much I keep talking, maybe I should stop talking about that. Everybody would maybe then believe. But anyway, so we had this huge jump in Social Security, and it's going to go up 5.9%, Jen?
Yeah, $22. Which I'll tell you, Tom, for the anybody on Social Security, that is a huge jump.
Okay. But I mean, I'm not saying that either one of us are anywhere close to that age. But for those that don't know,
slow down, huh?
For those that don't know, your Medicare is allegedly included, right? In your
Part A.
Yeah,
when you're 65.
When you get to be 65, your Medicare Part A is quote included. Medicare Part B, however, you have to pay for.
Right, it comes out of your monthly Social Security.
Well, and they don't trust you to send them the check.
Oh, no, unless you're not receiving Social Security, yeah. And then they'll bill you a quarter.
Yeah, they'll bill you. But if you're receiving it, they just say, well, we'll help you. We'll just take it out of your Social Security. All right, so this year, and they look at, you know, they wonder why people like me wonder, you know, where these people come from, or I get tired of them assuming how stupid we are. Right, so the Social Security went up 5.6%.
Yep.
Well, Medicare Part B premiums are going up 14.5%.
Right. Oh. And the people at the low end are losing. The people at the high end, with depending on what their benefit structure is, may clear a little more.
Well, there's a lot of people that are making a lot of Social Security people are in the 1,200 range, which I don't know where, you know, I don't know where you live with that, but. Actually, I do know where you live with that. Long story I'll give someday, John. We had, I think I've told this story before. We had a hacker years ago, and everybody's had one of these. Every securities firm, every bank, whatever. Thank God ours wasn't that big. Cause, you know, somebody hacked some money out of one of the people's accounts here, which has happened all over the place. And, you know, We essentially ended up taking a hit for it. Not eventually. I mean, we took the hit for it. But still, long story. I think there was more to it than meets the eye. I think it was an inside job, but that's, anyway, some money went to this lady down in Louisiana. So I'm trying to chase the money down, and I ended up getting her bank account. And, God, John, it was scary. I mean, you know, because if we're trying to find where did she send it, well, she sent it to some guy in Egypt who was supposed to be her boyfriend, you know, well, some very involved, sad story. She was making, her Social Security was like $1,100 a month. And I'm looking at her checks because I'm trying to find out where the money went. Turns out she wired the money to Egypt of all places. How anybody gets $45,000 in their account for the first time in their life and wires to some guy in Egypt that you never met. That's the state of the world. But anyway, I'm looking at the stuff and it's like, you know, $50 to Piggly Wiggly, $15 for the water bill, $20 for the gas bill, or the electric bill. I don't think she had gas down there. And it, you know, that's kind of it. She's living on $1,100. The house was paid for. Property taxes were, you know, $200 a year or something. I'm like, God's sake, you can actually live in places in this country for like $1,100 a month if you don't do anything, go anywhere, don't have a car. I mean, you wonder, but I mean, in this case, even our federal government has to understand, wait a minute, what are you doing here? Your increase is 5.6%, which you're like a blowhard. You're like a bazoo telling people how much you're raising their stuff. Yet this sneaks out. I don't see Biden or any of these guys, or Trump or whoever would have been up there proclaiming that they're raising Social Security, Medicare Part B by almost 15%. I don't see that announced huge deal.
No, would they? And what really frosts me, Tom, you have people on the Sunday shows kind of reprimanding people that, you know, oh, this is no big deal. You had Donna Brazile yesterday saying people have to be smart shoppers to deal with inflation. And I'm sorry, Donna Brazile, but this implies that people have been stupid shoppers until inflation came along, and now all of a sudden they have to get smart. That just doesn't cut it with me. I find that insulting to people.
Well, I mean, I've been saying this. I mean, PTI is in downtown Chicago. Thank God we've got a kitchen in here. There we went 6 months with no place down here. One place was open. Still no place to have breakfast. So, I mean, if I wanted my people to come in here and service the clients, I better find a way to feed them, right? So when I go to the store, I'm not afraid to go in the Restaurant Depot or someplace, and I buy stuff that's on sale. I mean, I'm not a bad cook. I mean, if the eggs are on sale, I buy more. I get that part. But the idea that all of a sudden you if you're smart enough, somehow you can mitigate inflation, I mean, come on. Who's kidding? You can't do that.
That has nothing to do with consumption patterns. I mean,
no.
they are what they are because of the way people have learned to live within their means, if they have done that. And, of course, not everybody does that or does it for long stretches. But people certainly on fixed incomes, you know, in the Social Security bracket of taxpayers, they have figured out somehow or other what they can get by with. And it isn't like they're trying to get wealthy. They're trying to just get by. And now you do this, and what, I mean, you're just tightening the screws on people and telling them you've got to work harder here. It's like this. Well, I mean, it makes me furious.
Well, yeah, the standard premium for Part B is going to be $170, up $21 from $148.50. So I'm going to say that takes your entire Social Security increase back.
It takes away your ability to pay for a slightly raised light bill in the winter if you've got a space heater that you depend on to be comfortable. I mean, the things that you have learned to have a budget for do fluctuate.
But I'm saying I think it totally negates the increase.
Right, of course.
But no, they're not telling you that. Anyway, SP Peters up 12, NASDAQ Peters up 43. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. It's my Weber on the board. Mr. Jan Flanagan with us as well. SP Futures up 13. As the Futures up 47. We're trying to bounce back. We had the first losing week in a while last week, even though we had an up Friday. It wasn't enough to negate the rest of the week. And we've had, you know, some stocks have been really shooting up, especially some of the new IPOs and everything. The electric truck manufacturer went flying up. And now Tesla's come down a bunch. A lot of it has to do with, you know, Elon Musk having to sell a lot of shares for tax reasons because of his options that he was getting. But still, I mean, Tesla's had a big run up, but, you know, there's been some stocks that people are looking at some of the numbers as well. But, you know, it's interesting here, John, is the deductible for Part B $233 up $30, another 14.5%. But it's stunning how the federal government themselves can tell you that the inflation is 6% when they're raising stuff 14. I mean, yep. It's pretty scary, but just one of the reasons why I keep, you know, sort of on this is I try not to be like, especially with the group we had the other night, John. It's pretty hard to. I wasn't exactly in a limousine with that group. You know what I mean? You know, you're going to hear stuff from everybody. You know, and that's one of the reasons why we like going to places we go. But because you can't ignore the rest of the world like they're not there. I mean, some people seem to be able to, but one of my good buddies works in the building here, and he's one of these guys that's kind of right on the insurance, the Obamacare / something something. So I think he might, I don't know, I think he might split, I don't know what the details are, but I think he might split his hospitalization with his employer, maybe, or something like that. So it's like $600 a month for the hospitalization. So he's on, I'm going to say that's the equivalent of probably what, Matty, the bronze plan or something? They still have the bronze, gold, and silver?
As far as I know.
Anyway, so I think that plan, I think, is for a family, as I recall a few years ago, I dug into it. It's $1,200 a month, something like that. But I think your deductible is pushing like six for the family, isn't it? Or is, yep, it, or is it 10? Maybe it was five for a person, 10 for the family. Anyway, so say these guys in the building, a lot of guys around here do, you know, work on weekends for people. They'll, you know, do tile, they'll paint, they'll do some stuff. Say they charge, you know, $30 an hour or something along those lines. So if you work two 10-hour days, by my math, that's a $600 weekend, right? In addition to working all week somewhere else. Well, one of the guys, go nameless, I'm not saying he's even one of the guys in the building, his wife gets sick last week. She's got, you know, some ailment and needs really to go in for a couple of tests to find out if she's okay. It's not like, you know, something you can let wait, you know, hang for a few days. And, you know, he was paranoid about, I can't go to an emergency room. That's all on me. And any emergency room, if you walk in and, you know, basically fart at them, they're going to, it's going to be $2,000, right?
Yep.
So he's like, how is it that a two hour run through in an emergency room, if you had some kind of a blockage or something, and like one or two tests, how can that be equivalent to like four weekends work for somebody? When it's one machine that you have there all the time, one X-ray. I mean, we're so far off the reservation on this stuff, Jan. I can't even. How can that be? Like, what if the guy was making $10 an hour, you know, or 12? I mean, what is that? 200 hours work for a couple of staffers in the engineering room to give you an X-ray? I mean, you know what?
Well, whatever happened to the concept of managed care, Tommy? I mean, in all of this, I mean, the idea of keeping costs for health care down or controlling it or preventing waste or whatever just has completely gone out the window. The only managed part of it now is making sure you can maximize the profits of the pharmaceutical industry and the healthcare conglomerates. They're the ones who have decided what they need to manage the system, and everybody else is obligated to, you know, cough up what's required.
Well, either you have, and this happened, I mean, it's not like it was his fault or anything, but it happened mostly, the big jump happened on Obama's watch. And if you look at the history of it, I mean, it wasn't like healthcare was going up every year before him. I mean, Clinton tried to do something about it with Hillary and her plan. And I don't know if it, people just didn't like her, didn't like the plan. I actually thought the plan wasn't that horrible, but I never knew all the details in it, so I can't really say if we just would have gone with Hillary's plan. I don't know if it was all that detailed to start with, but you know, Hillary, like her or don't, I don't really like her, is not a dumb lady. I mean, the plan maybe made some sense. I don't know. But so Clinton at least made an effort. But after 2 years, all the crap he got for it, he basically gave up, right, John? So they get another 6 years of him not doing much. And then all of a sudden Bush comes in, and Bush wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole, right? So now we're 14 years into when people thought we needed a solution, right? And I can give the whole history that I know of how the payments were in that industry. And the industry was really messed up. Whenever somebody says, you know, the industry was fine until Obamacare came along, there's a guy that needs, you know, either been drinking too much or something, because it's absolutely not true. I mean, what it means is if you had a Cadillac plan, it was okay for you, right, John?
Yep.
It wasn't okay for everybody. And I think the idea of the Cadillac plans are going the way the dodo bird anyway. So anyway, there needed to be something. So then Obama decides with his people around him that they're going to have this competing healthcare stuff and everything, these exchanges. But what he forgot to do, or maybe he didn't, you know, and again, I guess I'll take this to my grave, John. I don't know whether these people just don't understand the economics of it, or they do understand it and benefit by them. There were some huge numbers of, like, between the time they announced that there was going to be a plan or the year before or something like that, there were something like 260 combinations in health insurance companies. Now, when I say that, they're going to say, what are you talking about, Chief? For God's sake, there aren't 260 companies. Yeah, there are. I mean, the Blue Cross Blue Shield used to be independent in every single state, right, Jan?
Yeah.
And there were places like in Nevada that had, you know, 8 to 10 competing companies. And all of a sudden, in like a year, they got like 3, right?
That's right. I mean, you know, like every other piece of massive legislation,
yeah,
it was totally misnamed and deceitfully so. So the Affordable Care Act, like the Patriot Act or No Child Left Behind or you name it, was really about making health care unaffordable to the average.
Well, I don't think that. I honestly don't believe that they intended to do that.
Oh, I do, Tom.
But I'm saying, okay, that's the part I'm having trouble with. I don't know whether they did or they didn't, but the idea of, let's say, for instance, they went into this with good intentions. I mean, coming from a guy who stood on the trading floor for 20 years and saw how an auction market worked, if it actually is competitive, it's a beautiful thing. It's America, for God's sake. Now, if you actually had an exchange where people were bidding on these things in a fair market, I would say I'd be clapping on the top of the Empire State Building. But you don't let them all combine to the point where there's nobody left to make a market. It's like saying, okay, there's 350 people in the OEX pit competing, but why don't we do this? Why doesn't somebody, 3 people, buy 125 people apiece? I know that doesn't add up. And they all work for the same place, so you only have 3 people in there. Well, it's not exactly the same thing, is it?
Not at all. Well, the thing I got in the mail, this is about a month or two ago, you know, the Medicare compendium of covered medications, you know, so that you can determine during open enrollment which health, you know, care plan is best for you. And of course, the only reason this document is produced is to see if the medications that you believe you have to live on, you know, you got to have a supply of, and it's got to be somehow paid for or makes it affordable for you. The whole publication is just about which of these plans and which of these medications go hand in hand. It's the most ridiculous Byzantine thing you've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, you know, a guide to airline fares or something. And this is how, you know, the tremendous sums of money have been funneled to a very few people at the top of all these industries. And the average person is just, you know, tightened to the max to make this happen. And you have no bargaining power whatsoever. There's no real choice. There's no, you know, shopping around for a plan. It's all about what is the least desperate solution to this problem you have.
Well, depending on the drugs you're taking and whether they're generic or not, there's different plans that you fit better in. But I mean, it's a huge piece of choreography, and obviously, you listen to him on the show. John's a pretty intelligent guy. What if you can't even speak English and you're going through this?
Or what if you have medication that you don't even need, that you're being prescribed just because you've got some kickback situation going on, which there's been tons of examples of. You know, the whole thing is just rife with fraud and overpricing and patent manipulation and you name it. So,
well, how many people are on Lipitor?
The Obamacare administration has facilitated squeezing the last drop of blood out of the average consumer, who is the last thing they're thinking of.
I mean, but
in all this formula, the consumer of health care is the one that they are least interested in helping.
But it shouldn't surprise anybody that if you let everybody combine, you got a problem.
Right.
Now, the issue right now in the healthcare community is why does it cost so much for somebody to have any health? I mean, it's to the point where our healthcare isn't even very good because people are not going to get it because it's all out of pocket.
Well, and it's been effectively rationed in a way where
yeah.
you can wait 6 months to get an appointment with a GP or a specialist and you could be dead by then.
Well, it is definitely a portion. I mean, that's if everyone to get into a reasonable discussion, I won't say argument with people. Talk to people who have always had, you know, by the way, I'm in that group. I mean, at PTI, we always made sure we had the absolute best health care we could find for people. That was our shtick. That's why, I mean, the people here would rather have the world's best insurance than a little bit of a raise. But at least our people were smart enough to know that there was a trade-off. Other people are so damn dumb. Nobody's dumb, but some they don't get the connection. I mean, you listen to people on CNBC; they talk about healthcare. They don't get it. It doesn't affect them, but yeah, it does. I mean, if you're making $250,000 a year or $1 million a year, what those guys are making, if the healthcare was cheaper, you'd be making them $1,020,000, right?
Right.
But you know, it's not what. But the point being is this continues to become more and more expensive for people. But the idea that if you're in Chicago, and I know I've benefited from this. I've had, you know, a couple issues through the years, not very many. I'm pretty happy with the way things are turning out. But I mean, there's no doubt that when I had my heart rhythm problem 15 years ago, I got to see somebody at Northwestern and had it fixed because I knew those people were and I had the right doctor that got me in the door. The chances of somebody 15 years ago having that done if you were in Carbondale, Illinois, you'd be like the man in the moon. They wouldn't even know what it was, right? I mean,
right.
I mean, the idea of everybody having this terrific thing around, not everybody gets their knee operated by the same guy who does the Bulls and the Blackhawks, for God's sake, right? You probably got to wait 6 months to get it done other places. God help you if you're in one of those HMOs, right? I mean,
and the trouble too, with all of these, you know, the advances made in diagnosing conditions or experimental treatment or grants, you know, for some cancer that is, you know, having an uptick. What this has done too is it focuses grant money on teaching institutions in selected parts of the country. And if you're diagnosed with some condition that is treatable by one of these, well, trial programs or studies, and I've got friends who are going through this right now, you're required pretty much to move to that place, at least on a temporary basis, during the course of this study. I have a friend who's had to move from New Mexico to Houston because it's the only nearby place where this treatment is being offered for a life-threatening lymphoma that he's been diagnosed with. God knows, you know, where I've never heard of the thing before, but now he has to rent an apartment in Houston while he's there for this study, and if he's lucky, and we're all pulling for him, he comes out of it. But, I mean, this is all something that, when you get out of the nitty-gritty of what healthcare is supposed to be, it shouldn't mean this kind of disruption of your whole financial situation. And it's still a crapshoot, no matter how you cut it. And it's sold to you as if it's more than just a crapshoot, but in the long run, it may just be that. And that's not fair either, you know, to give you unrealistic expectations and bankrupt you in the process, too.
Well, absolutely. I went to Canada, when you could go to Canada, to talk to some guy who had a medical device type of thing, and a lot of people, my clients were investing in it, so I figured I better at least go find out what's going on with these guys. And long, sad story about the guy. Did have a terrific advice. Of course, Merck bought the marketing agreement with the guy and essentially torpedoed his product because they had a competing product. And there was no way the guy was ever going to make it through the FDA, even though the thing worked fine and whatever. But that I hear that story time and time again. But I meet this guy, and we're having a beer together, and I said, "So tell me, what's the story with the Canadian insurance deal?" He said, "Well, as soon as the baby's born, he basically gets a card. So he goes for 80 or 90% of the stuff." He said, "We're the fact that there's no kids here that can't go to the doctor. There's nothing like that, like there is in the U.S." He said, "So probably for most of society, it's a way better system than what you guys have, except for the people who are on the top end where you are, because we still send people here down to the U.S. for specialized cancer treatments and things like that." He said, "It's basically like a big HMO." He said, and he goes, "Oh, so in other words, if your kid messes up his knee playing high school football, he may have to wait in line for 3 weeks because there's three people that actually work in a factory that need their knee fixed, and they're going to be ahead of them. You know, it's not like you know, because you have a better policy, you get to jump in the front of the line, and, so he can play in 3 weeks because the coach needs him," kind of thing. You know, he said, "So that, you know, that's good and bad depending on who's in line." He said, "The problem is, because it's just like probably," and this guy knew everything about it, he goes, "it's just kind of like in the U.S. is if you're living in one of the territories and you have, you know, some brain issues," he goes, "my mom had brain cancer and I knew people in Toronto and I was able to jump the line basically and get her to somebody at the University of Toronto, and we helped her out for a while and she ended up dying, but," he said, "we helped her out for a while. You would never have gotten that treatment if you were in, you know, somewhere in the hinterlands of Calgary or someplace." He said, "But so it's in that regard, it's the same thing, you know, getting their front of the," because it's basically like a big HMO, where if you're in the U.S. with an HMO, you're right where you are. If you've got the real Cadillac plan, like I suppose you had, which I did," he goes, "it's nowhere near as good as what you have, which is, but it's not like it's nothing, John. I mean, it's, you know, it's just different. I mean, how many people who do totally rag on the Canadian system have never had an HMO in their life?"
Right.
Where before you see a specialist, you got to see the one guy, and if he just says you're not bad enough, you don't get to go, you don't go. I mean, it's been an amazing percentage of our population are in the same sort of system.
They don't really have a choice between an outpatient treatment or a procedure, or, you know, spending overnight in the hospital, which would really help you get back on your feet the next day, because their plan only covers, you know, the outpatient version of it. So.
Well, yeah, with the, so anyway, John, I got a bunch of stuff here from, and as we see the markets going back, you know, up, up, up every day, I get a lot of stuff from from a lot of people, but our buddy, Paul has sent in a couple of things here, and he's talking about his deflation. People are still on this thing. Cheap labor around the world keeps labor prices low. Okay. Technology constantly decreases the cost of production. Okay. And debt destroys future demand. So the idea is if we're all buried in debt, we're going to solve inflation by doing that. I don't buy that. I mean, what we're allowed to believe is that they can pour as much money into the system as they want, and the system will be self-righting because the velocity of money will just go down. I'm going to say that's categorically stone-cold wrong. Ken?
I do, too. It's just, you know, debt isn't going to discourage consumption. It's going to just require more debt.
Right. It just requires kind of more debt. But we also got another thing from our friend. But this is the kind of thing that's really scary. And I don't know how anybody deals with this. the idea of where's the one? I'm trying to find stuff is difficult for me, as you well know. In 1980, national debt was 0.9 trillion. 1988, it was 1.8, so it doubled basically in that 8-year term. In 96, it was 3.6. It almost exactly doubles in everybody's 8-year term. So anybody who thinks it's all Democrat or all Republican, you know, I guess you're smoking the crinkly cigarettes, because in 2004 it was 7.2, 2012 it was 15. It's exactly every 8 years, John. It's scary. 2020 it was about $30 trillion, or 2020, it's about 30, if you take it all in. 2028, it might be about 60. I don't know if it'll get that high, but, and people just say, but if we change politicians every 2 years, why do we think it's going to make a difference?
Well, you'd like to think, I guess, at some level, somebody is saying, gee, we hit our target again. That would imply that somebody actually is expecting this and would be surprised if it didn't double within that period. You know, who those people are, or you know, what's going into that decision makes you wonder, what the heck's going on. But it seems to be choreographed. It seems to be predictable. It seems to be inexorable, too.
Yeah, I mean, because the idea is the new monetarists will never have to pay it back. I don't see how it doesn't begin to affect what you do. I mean, clearly, if you look at this Medicare number, the reason why I'm doing this is on a small scale. We're going to give everybody a 5% raise, and we're going to basically trumpet ourselves. We've never had a trade raise this big in Social Security. And 2 weeks, it's been a month. Now, silently, they've taken it all back from everybody. Right?
And the thing is, Tom, it will be eventually paid off, but in things like projected life expectancy or average wealth or educational achievement or whatever else. People will pay a price. It will come out of flesh and blood, though. It won't come out of their pocketbooks, because the pocketbooks will be pretty barren by then.
Well, I don't...
But we will pay a price for it. It will be paid back somehow.
We're going to see. I mean, the market's up 18 points again today, so we'll probably have a huge up week, because last week we were down, because these guys are absolutely relentless on this pouring money into the system. And I know I talk about it all the time, but it is the gorilla in the room, and for some reason they absolutely will not stop. And I don't see how somebody, well, John, we should put ourselves out. We should stop doing the show and become consultants for people doing our labor contracts. But I don't think people even know they need us.
No. It's reached that kind of a desperate state where there isn't an idea that you have. Pushback in this, and there, at many levels, of course, you don't. But the fact that people are, and now after a year and a half or more of lockdowns and virtual imprisonment for a lot of people, to say nothing of being deprived of a livelihood or your kids of an education in the public schools, you're not even more emotionally beat up. You feel like you have less leverage than you did in 2019. I think people when they reach a tipping point on this, I think many have already reached it, but it doesn't translate into any kind of a political solution that people see that they can avail themselves of. And once they give up on the political solutions, what other alternatives are left to them? I mean, it may be something that's been choreographed too, that it will devolve into some kind of tribal warfare like other people on the show have talked about. The people will respond in visceral, angry, irrational ways, and of course that can be choreographed and planned exclusively too. So,
well, I think that the idea of and everybody knows my opinions on Bitcoin, but I'll say this: is if the governments are planning on doing that inexorably, is that the way? I didn't say that right. To their fiat currency, there probably will be at some point an alternative currency. But I think the alternative currency, who knows? I mean, this happens all the time. I'm saying the alternative to a currency that's worth nothing is probably not another currency that's worth nothing. it would not shock me at all that somebody somewhere would have, especially if oil keeps going up, to have currency, at least some sort of a an international currency for settling payments between countries, and I don't know, but maybe between people too, $10 is worth, whatever, a cup of oil or a quart of oil or something. I mean, but at least at some point there's something at the bottom of it. You know, to say that your dollar is becoming worth nothing, so let's have Bitcoin, which is worth nothing, I don't know that that's a solution necessarily. But some people think it is. And obviously the people that get in earlier are doing pretty well. Now, whether they'll ever sell or not is another story. But
when you have the Biden administration's nominee for control of the currency saying that all demand accounts should reside with the Fed, you know, at that point, it doesn't matter whether the Fed is on the dollar or Bitcoin or, you know, saltine crackers. It won't be yours. So,
well, I mean, but if you, I can see where somebody might go with that, Jan. And I'm not agreeing. I don't agree with a lot of what this lady says. What's her name again, by the way? I forget the name.
Omarosa, Sally Omarosa from Cornell Law School.
But when you think about it, is a lot of times when people say stuff like that, there's a recognition that you're pretty much all down that road anyway. I mean, at one point, the amount of they poured some money in their banking system when I was still having adult beverages with my guys in the Fed, and nobody goes to work anymore at the Fed, so I haven't seen these guys in ages. At one point, 2 years ago, M0, which I don't think many people know what that is, M0 is the amount of money deposited back on the Fed every night. They poured so much money in the system that, yes, the velocity of money actually dropped to the point where it was so much money out there it couldn't be absorbed. So, actually, a lot of the money that was in the banks was back at the Fed anyway. And when you get to the point where you only have four or five big banks that essentially have all the money from everybody, because even the smaller banks will deposit some stuff at the Fed sometimes, right? Or, I mean, at the bigger banks, they all have a clearing bank. A huge money center bank.
Well, and home financing has pretty much gone that route anyway, where it's regional, if not nationalized now. So there's absolutely no local decision making that goes into it anymore.
Well, there is, but then it's immediately sold.
The retail portal, but the underwriting decisions, the money management of it is all way removed from where the real estate is, and it has no particular.
And your Wells Fargo. They don't care if they hold a mortgage. They get these huge fees for managing.
Right, right.
But I'm saying it's to the point where the Fed has actually entered the fray to such an amount that it almost doesn't make any difference if the money was actually there. I think it's a horrible outcome. But it's not like one of the board members used to say, we don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. Right?
Well, it will mean more closely supervised, which is already being talked about. The IRS is going to be watching everything you do, but you're putting it all with the Fed is just an easy way of making that
accessible.
And not only trackable, but controllable, too.
But your clearing agents.
And they can decide, no more than this, X number of dollars with withdrawals in a period, and right away we're in a cashless society, which is probably what they've always envisioned.
We got to dash that. Let me ask you this for later in the week. We'll tee this up. If OCC and CME Clearing Corp and everybody all have their own outlets into the Fed without using a bank, why shouldn't a rich person? Why does he need a bank?
Or the little person.
Well, I'm saying the little person may not want to go to the Fed, right. But my point is they don't want with Dodd-Frank, if there's a half a billion dollars of OCC has overnight, the bank doesn't want it. It goes right to the Fed. Well, how crazy is that? Why shouldn't OCC have a bank? Is that the bank's job is to what? Take money and give loans. They don't want to do either of those anymore. I mean, so what's the point? Anyway, Janet, thank you. SP Futures now up 18.
Close the whole system down.
SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 80. Got to go up. We'll be right back, sir. We have
Mike Hart.
Wow, we have Mike Hart. I hope he's doing good. We'll be right back, Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. It's Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 1775. NASDAQ futures up 78. We've got the Dow up 156. Individual stocks. We've got Boeing up 741. There must be some news there that they weren't up there a while ago, but now they are. Microsoft up 288. Microsoft, the rich keep getting richer, which is, I guess that's good. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 166.6%. Shanghai down 5.2%. Hang Seng up 62.2. So mostly up over there, up but mixed a little bit. For Europe, we got the DAX up 50.3%. FTSE down 7. Call that flat. Kick around up 40.6%. So mostly the upside there. Bonds, minus 2 basis points, 1.56. The Bund, minus 0.27, which is down 1 basis point. Japan, unchanged, a positive 0.7. Oil, kind of whack-whack on the oil, but we're back up over 80. We were down under 80 last time I did this, an hour ago. But now it's 80.19, it's down 60 cents. Brent down 71 cents, 81.46. Natural gas up 5 cents, but 4.84. That's low. It's just $6, like a week ago. So natural gas is all over the place. RBOB, under 230 now at 229. That's down another 2 cents. And we've got gold now up 70 cents, 1869. Silver down 12 cents, 2522. Copper down 2 cents at 442. And we've got Bitcoin up 1200 bucks to 65,458. Still below the 66.5 or so number last Monday, I think was the top on that. Who knows? Maybe we'll go back over that this week. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We do have a pretty significant rollover crash that just happened. It's a semi
on the exit ramp of the Stevenson inbound, right at exit 279, which is US 12 LaGrange there. That traffic is getting through on the shoulder, but that's a pretty significant rollover semi-crash that just came across here a few minutes ago that's affecting the inbound northbound Stevenson on I-55. No issues on the Dan Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford, normal traffic volumes there. Traffic building steadily on the Eisenhower, Edens, and Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Lakeshore Drive looking okay. Out in the suburbs, we're all quiet too. Weather today, some partly cloudy skies early, and then we'll be mostly overcast. A high of just 37 today, well below normal. Right now it's cloudy and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 57. In sports, with the Bears on their bye week, the NFL continued on in Week 10. The Cardinals lost their second game of the year. They were blown out by the Panthers 34-10. Sunday Night Football, it was the Chiefs all over the Raiders on the road 41-14. NBA basketball, the Bulls won their second game of the West Coast road trip that they take every fall. After dropping game one, they beat up on the Clippers last night 100-90. Bulls are back in action tonight in LA against the Lakers. The Suns played as well, and they blew out the Rockets 115-89. Chief.
What, who's tonight?
In Monday Night Football?
Yeah.
Let me check.
So what are the...
Not sure.
What is the Detroit... How does Pittsburgh feel? And your buddy Tony Romo was asking yesterday, what if you end up 0-15-1? What does that say?
I don't know what that says, but it's pretty funny. But by the way, Monday Night Football tonight is Rams 49ers, which is a solid game. The 49ers basically have to win to stay in the playoff race, and the Rams are really good, so that's a good one.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great. How you doing, Chief?
All right, we've missed you.
Yeah,
he was on last week.
I know, but
I'm still reeling from the 2 weeks you weren't. I've got used to every week where if I don't get my VIX stuff, where else do I get it? You're your man. Hey, did you see this morning? Talk about changing your name. Royal Dutch Shell said on Monday it would scrap its dual share structure and move its head office to Britain from the Netherlands, pushed away by Dutch taxes and facing climate pressure in court as the energy. They are no longer Royal Dutch Shell. They're just Shell, I guess. A Royal Shell or something.
Just Shell.
Yeah.
Take away the Royal. All right.
Yeah, the Dutch.
I didn't see that, but, these corporate governance, these corporate actions, you know, every now and then you do see something as small as that. It does have an impact on the stock price for whatever reason.
Well, evidently the Dutch authorities, as you know, I've been lobbying for a while. It's getting nowhere. It's like, you know, peeing in the ocean, basically. I've been lobbying for a new corporate tax structure to where the corporations pay taxes about the same as everybody else, but they get to deduct dividends. Because I don't like the double payment. I haven't liked it since I was in college. And I think you get these huge corporations because they can always make an excuse to not pay dividends to people because of the double taxation. So I'd like to remove that and say, you pay taxes on everything, but if you pay a dividend. Now, interestingly enough, they must have something like that over in the Netherlands because they have a 15% dividend withholding tax. So essentially what they must be saying is if you took my plan, say, okay, you made $100, say pay taxes on the whole $100, except if you sent $40 out to the shareholder Mike Hart, you can deduct the $40 from the $100, so you're only paying taxes on the $60. But I think what they must be saying is we're not going to trust Mike to pay the tax. We're going to withhold on him too. I would never have thought of that. Would you?
It wouldn't have occurred to me, but it doesn't surprise me that the tax people out there have thought of all the loopholes, or they always try and think of the loopholes. Loopholes always manage to emerge. Post change.
But I don't see why you would, I don't know why you'd have to do that. I mean, you're obviously going to get the equivalent of the 1099 saying you got the money, right? I don't know. Who knows? But here's the Dutch government's comment. The Dutch government said on Monday it was unpleasantly surprised Shell's plans to move to London. So, are you going to tell the wife that someday you've unpleasantly surprised me?
No, it's a good one, but no, I probably won't say that to the wife.
No, I probably won't either. But you like that one, Matty? Unpleasantly surprised. I like that. These guys get elected for some reason. Okay, what's going on? Vix is down at whatever. He's almost 17 here, below 17, 16.67.
Oh, yeah.
We had the guy that bought the 90 bazillion calls for what, this Wednesday, right, or Thursday? When's expiration? The VIX. It's this week, right?
Yeah, it's, well, I mean, the November cycle ends, for the monthly, in a day. And then we're looking next to December 22nd, which is 36 days rather, until expiration. So we're either playing, we're getting out of November right now. And we're not playing in the weekly in VIX. You know, we've looked at a lot of studies of, just liquidity and how it stands in the market. And we know as traders, intuitively we know as traders, we want to be in liquid markets because that's where we're going to get fair fills. We're going to be able to get in and out. We're going to be able to take profits, and profits are on the table. And if we step into those weekly cycles, it's just not there. The ability to take advantage of price changes all of a sudden becomes a real challenge in patience, and the consequences, you don't get filled at all. So right now we're looking at November 17th, one day until expiration. If you have those on, now or tomorrow is the time to get out, and then we're going all the way to DEETH next with 36 days.
Well, didn't this guy buy... was it, how many thousand did he buy? The 20s. We're at 17. Unless an asteroid like hits New York today or tomorrow, I don't think those 20s are worth squat. Do you?
If I were betting on it, I'd be betting against them. That's for sure.
Yeah, but depending on what he was hedging, if he was hedging a portfolio that, you know, is $30 billion, he might be up 5% in there, he might be okay with it. I mean, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it all comes down to is, you know, what exactly is the move to put that many option contracts on? What exactly are we hedging? And that makes all the difference. If it's just a naked play, well, this poor person is walking away with probably a pretty bad day.
$45 million down the drain.
That's right.
God. You know, interesting. I wonder how much the person who sold them to it made by the time they hedged and everything. And if they bought a whole bunch of futures at, you know, the 26th level, I still think they probably made money. But if you really hedged it, you probably didn't make the whole 45.
Right.
You made half.
No way.
No way, yeah. There's no, I mean, if we'd have stayed right there, you could have. But I think they lost a lot of money on the hedge. Had to.
Yeah, my experience with market making in general is, as sort of a default, we're always looking to take, the smallest portion out, just lock into that profit.
Well, what we're talking about with the listeners, I mean, with everybody, but Mike and I sometimes do lapse into industry jargon. If a stock is trading $100 and somebody comes in and buys, 100 of those calls from you, an at the money call or put is generally roughly 50 deltas, meaning that for the next tick of the stock up or down, say it moves up a dime, you would expect the option to move a nickel. Now, depending on the interest rates, the call delta is going to be a little higher than the put delta. It'd be what? Normal times, Mike, it'd be the call delta would be 52 or 3, and the put delta would be 47 or 8. And the futures side, where interest is not really a consideration, if you're right at 100, both the call and the put have exactly 50 delta, right, Mike?
Right.
It's a futures, but now since we have no interest, it's probably like 51.49, right? So the bottom line is, if you don't want to be, long or short, and you sell somebody 100 of these calls, you're immediately going to buy 5,000 shares of stock or 5,200 or something, depending on what. That's just to get you, quote, even. But if you think that whoever it is that bought those from you bought them with an edge to them, like somehow or another has some information that you don't, God, how could that ever happen, Mike, right? You might actually overhedge and say, well, hell, I'm going to buy 7,000 shares.
I'm going to go with this guy.
Yeah, I'm going to go with him. So I'm going to buy, instead of 5,000 or 5,200, I'm going to buy 6,000 or 7,000 shares. And then all of a sudden, if this thing drops and this guy's stone cold wrong and you drop to, you know, 96, you could actually lose money when you're the one getting short on the deal, right? Because you overhedged.
Yeah.
I mean it's happened
exactly
to me.
Right.
It's happened to me many times. Because I'm like, all right, it's lunchtime. There's nobody here. And all of a sudden, this guy has to have these calls. He must know something. So you overhedge. Maybe even go with him. Maybe you buy 10,000 shares of stock. So you're actually long, you know, and then all of a sudden the thing goes down like a star and say, where did this guy who's supposed to be so smart become an idiot all of a sudden? You know, I mean, that can happen, right?
It definitely can. And, you know, our assumptions about what the other guy's doing, has proved wrong to me so many times that I try to not let it cloud my judgment as much as possible. But it's difficult when you see a massive amount of size going off at one particular strike. Intuitively you think there is something going on at this strike and this is where the action's at. Well, it is where the action's at right now, but, you know, 2 or 3 weeks from now, that's still where the action is going to be.
Well, this is the, I'll pull a minute out of this, Mike, and I'm going to say that's the difference between being a market maker and a retail investor. Is a retail investor, and obviously that's who I deal with all day long. It's my job these days. No longer market maker on the floor. If somebody calls you up and they say, gee, chief, what do you think about, pick a name, IBM, Intel, whatever it is, and Intel. I say, all right, well, Intel's been down a bunch, but yeah, I don't know if it's a good buy here or not, but it seems to me that if the world's got a chip shortage, these guys make chips. If they can't make they can't make hay now, they're never going to make hay. The sun's shining and whatever. I mean, I would say that out of all the stocks there, you would think that the chip companies, now they haven't been, okay, so they might have something wrong with them, but for a while, they were getting hammered, them and Micron and people that actually make chips, and you're like, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? But let's say you have a general, okay, let's get something to it. But you essentially, the retail trader may say, okay, go buy me 1,000 shares or whatever. So I do, man. That's what we do with PTI Securities and like any other securities firm. So you buy somebody some Intel, either it be options or it be stock or whatever. You never, the thought is you've made the determination what you want to do, and you go out and you do it, right? You never really think for a second that the person you buy it from, and oh, by the way, you do buy it from a person. You don't buy it from the market. You buy it from somebody on the other side. And when you pay money, it goes to their account. So in other words, there is a strong chance that maybe the guy selling it to you might be the smarter guy today. It never crosses your mind, I know, as a retail trader. But if you think about it for a second, if this is such a great buy, why is this guy willing to sell it to me? But nobody ever thinks that way, right? I mean, the guy on the other side of the trade is an idiot. I mean, that's people's. But if you're a market maker, it's a different world. You don't say I want to get long Intel or short, because the first 4 days you're ever on a trading floor, if there's three stacks in your pit, you go, well, that one's going up today, that one's going down. You realize that that's a zero sum game, because there might be somebody who knows that, but I never met him. Sure wasn't me. So what you would do is, the OEX was the same way. First thing out of the gate, the broker would say, 300 calls, and you'd go, I don't know, 3 to 1/8, well, I'll buy 20. Okay, where are you now? Well, I'm 3 to 1/4. I'll buy another 20. And you're sitting there going, now you might actually be bullish on the darn thing. Now you're short 40 calls. Where are you now?
Right.
That type of thing. You know, and all of a sudden, now you're 3 1/8 bid, hoping to God that the next one comes in and sells, or you at least scratch the first one. All of a sudden, you get, as a market maker, you always think that the person on the other side of the trade is the smart one, not you, because he's the guy who initiated it, you didn't. So you have a totally different mentality than a retail trader. Retail traders, I think Intel's going up. I'm buying Intel. I don't care about the guy who sold it to me because he's a moron, because it's going up because I think so, right? I mean, that is the retail.
Right.
I mean, it sounds trite, but am I pretty accurate there, Mike?
You're 100% accurate. And what I would notice, too, you know, when I was a floor trader as well, I was trading stocks, you know, it really didn't matter if the stock was going up or down that day because I was basically a slave to the order flow.
Yeah.
And the order flow was everyone was coming in and buying this hot stock for the day. I was on the other end of it. I was short, and I was more short, and I was more short after that. I was always being the contrarian on this stock. It didn't always work out. You had to, and that's why you had to take profits quickly when they did arise. You didn't have the luxury of saying, I'm going to go home short at 100,000 shares and see where it ends up in the morning. Far too much risk as a market maker.
Well, that's why you didn't want a huge order on a close.
Right.
Generally, I mean, why would you? And the people, I mean, and there's a reason why. I mean, as much as we you might comment on this, Mike, if you want to, is was the firms kind of get notified, or they get the order that mutual funds are a buyer on the close. So if they want to buy a whole bunch of Intel, the specialist doesn't sell it to them on the close. He tries to accumulate it ahead of them, right? So when he sells it to them,
yeah,
at 51, he bought it all at 50 7/8. I mean, and part of that's sleazy, but the other part is he doesn't want to go home short 200,000 shares of Intel. It's not his job, right?
No, of course not. And you know, in the light of creating a fair market, it does help for that market maker to have a little bit of lead time to accumulate those shares. So when the orders do come in, the market's ready to support that type of order flow.
And you wouldn't have to do it. If the mutual funds, I don't know, I'm never exactly sure how they handle the over-the-counter stocks, or NAD, but New York Stock Exchange, I mean, they made the rule that they had to get basically the last print of the day. It wasn't my rule or your rule. I mean, when you do that, you expect people to sell it to you. Of course, the mutual funds don't care if somebody accumulated an eighth or a quarter lower before them. It's not their money, right?
Right.
I mean, you and I would never trade that like that for our clients. If we knew we wanted to buy 100,000 shares, we'd start working the order as soon as we got it. We wouldn't wait till we wouldn't tell the specialist.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't tell the specialist, by the way, we'll be back in an hour with 100,000 shares to buy. I mean,
yeah. And there's no way around it. Yeah, you just wouldn't. You know, if you're trying to, you know, get the best fill possible, you don't show your hand. It's a game of poker. You don't lay your hand down on the table while you're playing.
Well, you sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. I mean, you know, that's why when you give kind of hard, fast rules like you and I just gave, there's no. We had a client. I won't say who it was. We recognize them, but they were huge. They like to most people like to buy the leaps when they first came out, and these guys like to sell them because they had a big model that said, pick a number. Disney. We think Disney's worth 150. We love Disney, but by the way, it's trading 160. You know, so how the hell are we going to, we don't want to pay more than 150. So what those guys would do is they'd buy the stock at 160 and they'd sell like a leap call for like 10 bucks, which got them down to, to one, which was kind of odd, but that's what they like to do. And we did a couple of orders for these guys where they were doing 3,000 shares, but not 3,000 shares, 300,000 shares, 3,000 options in a stock where the open interest was like 25. So what we did is, you know, back day when you had the crowd, we'd say, you know, we could call down to a floor. I mean, we were that good of a firm when you could actually call floors and stuff. My guys could. I mean, most other places couldn't. But as we were a floor member, CBOE. So we would call down and we'd tell the broker, say, look, here's where we are in this thing, like all week. You know, so whenever your guys can get the stock at the price you want, just fill us. And we were getting, you know, 500 a day for like 6 days, and we were done. And these guys had tried like the four other firms. They couldn't get anything. But we just put the order down there and say, look, within reason, here's where we are. When you get your hedge, dump us some. And every hour or so, we'd get 40, we'd get 50, another 100. And we ended up getting these guys a price that if we would have gone down there and basically jammed it where the sun don't shine, I'll bet we'd have been 3,000 contracts, a half an hour worse, which is what, 150 grand?
Yeah, easily.
You know, so, I mean, we weren't going to do that. So it depends on the order and your relationship. But now there are no relationships like that, right? I mean, I suppose you could let something work in, but who knows who's on the other side of stuff now.
No, it's anonymous. It's computerized. I don't think there is an edge like that anymore. There's intelligent ways to play it, which would be breaking it up into smaller sizes and not just throw the big chunk out there and see what happens.
Mike, are we good to go till the end of the year, or is there still bumps in the road here?
I've been bearish for 2 months, and it's a tough one.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're looking pretty strong going into the end of the year. If I wasn't already short, I don't think I'd get much shorter here until we get through the New Year's and see where we stand.
Maybe it's going to take you and I to turn bullish. Might happen.
Maybe.
Take care of yourself, buddy. Talk at you soon. SP Viewers up 15, NASDAQ Viewers up 66. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.